To quote Madonna, who I love, she said the most controversial thing she's done is to stick around, which I think is incredible. It kind of shows about how much pressure she's just been put under to just disappear into the background.
That's Pia Fisher, beauty strategist at WGSN, talking about one of my favourites, Madonna, who kicked off her celebration tour in London and is still rocking it at 65. Hello and welcome to the WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast. In today's episode, we're talking about ageing well and the emergence of age-agnostic beauty. To discuss this with me, I have my esteemed colleagues and far younger colleagues, Cassandra Napoli, senior strategist on Insight, who's dialing in from the US, and Pia Fisher, a beauty strategist that you just heard from, who's here in London. So we've had this episode planned for a while, but it seems to be beautiful timing since at the recent Paris Fashion Week, the actor and general beauty icon Pamela Anderson caused a bit of a stir going au naturel, grey hair and all, on the catwalk for Vivienne Westwood and other brands. And she also discussed the freedom of embracing her age and being really happy in her own skin. There was lots of applause from other women of a certain age, including Jamie Lee Curtis and myself. But I just wondered, Pia, whether beauty brands are groaning the world over with this revelation. Because, you know, is it going to hit product sales? Were people going to be going fresh-faced? Or is it actually a beautiful opportunity?
I hope no one's groaning. Catering to Gen Xers and redefining what aging looks like Pamela Anderson's done, is just a huge white space opportunity. Gen Xers are some of the highest spenders and earners worldwide, just to put it down in numbers. And then the rebirth of celebrities. So we've seen Pam Ann, and then we've seen Madonna, Jennifer Aniston, Jennifer Coolidge kind of reemerge as they hit their 50s and 60s. And it just shows the opportunity and the demand from consumers for brands to refocus and just relook at how they treat aging. Stop treating it as a homogenous experience. Won't mean like going au naturel, going grey for everyone. It will for some. But it will mean lots of different things for different people. So there's Gen Xers that are parents later in life. There's empty nesters supporting children. And there's loads of Gen Xers entering their peaks career-wise. So they'll want a different result from their cosmetics products, which is just creates this massive white space opportunity for brands to cater for all these unmet needs. And then I should say, like, embracing age isn't just for Gen Xers. So we've got our millennials as well representing. So Lady Gaga, her Oscars performance, I don't know if you saw, she was like super glammed up for the press at the beginning. And then she stripped back everything for her performance. It was really, really moving. And then again, Julia Fox, a little bit controversial figure. But she said, aging is fully in, aging is effing sexy. And she's like really redefining what it means to be an aging millennial. So it's really this age-agnostic approach for all the generations.
So presumably, Pia, that means there's a different opportunity. Rather than your classic red lipstick, beauty brands might want to think about developing other products.
Yeah, definitely. And there will be a shift in focus, not just from makeup, but to skincare and hair care products that really nourish the skin and protect it.
And you talked about age-agnostic. Can you please explain that term?
It's kind of emerged recently, and we had to have a discussion like on the beauty team about what we felt it meant. We feel that it embodies serving needs and not numbers. So consumers are starting to push back against youth being heralded as the pinnacle of beauty ideals. And we're already seeing loads of brands tapping into this. So we've got lots of UK brands like Boots is number 7. They have Future Renew, has no mention of anti-aging on the packaging. And the same with The Body Shop. They've moved to more skin resilience claims that we were talking about. And then my favourite brand that's doing this age agnosticism is the 1999 makeup brand. So they create makeup for all ages from 19 to 99. And their mission is to tear down all traditional definitions of beauty and really allow individuals to create their own. And then I also kind of want to mention the unmentionable here, which is all the kind of things that happen as you age. So modern incontinence products that are designed for your skin as it goes through the menopause. So there's incredible functional fragrances like one from Able, which has been designed to sit really well on menopausal skin that changes slightly as the level of oils and hormones change.
I love the sound of 1999, just because anyone that likes Prince is probably going to want to buy into that brand. It's brilliant. Is it purple packaging?
I don't think it is. I think it's silver, but their imagery is incredible.
So I'd like to come to you now, Cassandra. You're from our Consumer Insight team. And I want to talk about this sort of more broadly across society, because there's a wider movement happening around human aging and longevity and these notions of living forever. It's in the news quite a lot at the moment. What's happening here, Cassandra?
Yeah, so this is the decade of aging well, according to the World Economic Forum. They've proclaimed that aging well is this lifelong healthcare priority. And they say that this is going to sort of stretch from 2020 to 2030. This is the new priority going forward. We've been hearing this for a couple of years now. It was a big conversation at South by Southwest last year. And it's also part of some of our forecasts. So we had been studying the sort of longevity market. And if you think about it, you know, it's now really infiltrating into our culture quite a bit. If you turn on Netflix, I'm sure you've seen The Secrets of the Blue Zones emerge. This is Life, or I think it's Live to 100 or Life at 100, which looks at blue zone communities around the world, parts of Sardinia, Japan, Greece, etc., where residents typically live to 100. They live really long lives, and people have gone and studied these communities. I think it's also very interesting, right, that, you know, aging is this sort of universal phenomenon. It's what connects us to others. It's the one thing that is certain in life. You know, we are born, we're going to age, and then we die. And I think there really hasn't been a way to escape that, right? Sure, there's products. There's been anti-aging kind of narratives in the media and in products like beauty products, as Pia was talking about. But what's interesting now is we're shifting into this era of curing aging or hacking aging. And it makes sense. Anybody who's kind of tapped in at the moment will probably have read about a tech entrepreneur called Brian Johnson. He is currently exploring solutions around this about curing aging. So he's essentially using doctors and data and millions of dollars to hack his biological age. So he's about 47, I think, at the moment, and he is doing all of these kind of outlandish kind of practices that cost a lot of money and time and effort and energy and lots of people around him to essentially reduce his age back to, you know, ideally in his teens. I think he said his heart is as strong as like a 37-year-old at the moment.
I've been reading about this. He's even been kind of blood transfusions from his son. So there's something a little bit about it that feels very vampiric and sort of gothic in some of these approaches. It's fascinating. And how much of this do you think ties in with tech and AI and, you know, deep fakes? There's all these ways now that we can reprogram someone who's dead, like Marilyn Monroe, James Dean. Is this sort of also part of this whole kind of mind shift, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're in this AI renaissance right now, right? And we're using technology as tools to reimagine what, you know, has always been status quo. And what we're seeing is that this idea of digital immortality is really coming to the fore. We've seen things like, as you said, we've seen celebrities be revived. We've heard about de-aging technology, right? So Tom Hanks and Harrison Ford, these celebrities have essentially been de-aged with technology so that we don't have to hire younger actors, right? We can just have these individuals show up as their own selves and we can de-age them to, I think, 30 years old is what Harrison Ford was de-aged to.
So if we take it back to the real world, away from sort of entertainment, what do you think the knock-on effects are with this sort of concept of people aging well? Do you see retirement ages kind of going or getting longer and longer? What do you think these sort of other impacts are on people being healthier and kind of living longer well?
It's interesting because if you think about it, if people are living longer and they're living healthier lives and, you know, the 70s and the 80s become rebranded, right? We're going to see more active lifestyles. We're going to see a graying workforce. I think that's something that's really interesting. There's a couple of studies out there that have pointed to the fact that actually happiness is lowest in midlife. So around, you know, 45 to 47, I believe, is when it's the lowest. And then it gets progressively higher as you age. And in the 70s is when you're actually the most happy, according to statistics. So this could be a new focus for brands in the years ahead. It's about kind of rethinking of, how we talk about, you know, aging. What does the sort of imagery look like when we talk about, you know, the boomers and those who are entering their 70s and 80s. We've been doing a lot of research on this as well, and the added benefit of having money to spend at this age as well. There's an entire consumer pool that really is being untapped, and that's things like travel, that's things things like beauty, at things like hospitality, fashion. There's really endless opportunities here. And then just from a graying workforce perspective, that could really shift things as well. Obviously, people were working longer. We have, I think, five generations working at the same time right now. That's huge, right? And that is something that is unprecedented. We've never had that before. So this idea of aging well is really has knock-on effects to everything across society and obviously down to product as well, which I'm sure Pia can get into.
You're listening to the WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast. And in this episode, we're talking about aging well and the emergence of age-agnostic beauty. I'm Bethan Ryder, editorial director at WGSN, and my guests today are Cassandra Napoli, senior strategist on Insight, and Pia Fisher, a beauty strategist. Pia, coming back to beauty, what exciting tech and scientific innovations are there on the horizon? And how do you see that kind of influence in the beauty industry itself?
There was a huge breakthrough earlier this year that was really exciting that scientists found that they can slow down aging in mice. So previously they thought that DNA mutations were causing aging, but they actually found that it's epigenetic instructions that go awry. So it's kind of like software code that corrupts, and the scientists have shown that they can be rebooted and that the original kind of young code is still within the body and they can reverse this aging process. So this is all using epigenetics, which is about the readability or the expressions of the genes rather than actually changing DNA. And we will definitely see this start to emerge in beauty, and we're already seeing it kind of coming up in brands claiming kind of epigenetic benefits.
So, Pia, do you think that there's going to be a shift in language here from sort of anti-aging? Is that something that's also changing when it comes to beauty? You talked about rejuvenation. Are there sort of new ways and new language here that people will be adopting, brands?
Yeah, so we're kind of already seeing it, this shift from rejuvenation to prejuvenation. So it's about hitting the wellness before it dips. It's kind of anti-aging redirected to longevity with a bit more of a wellness spin. So there's a focus on health span as well as lifespan. So people living longer want to have a better cognitive well-being alongside looking good. So there's lots of products that are kind of tapping into both of these sides. There's this company, Modern Age, in the US, that they assess your blood markers to assess your metabolic age, your subjective age, and your cognitive function. There's kind of thoughts that maybe this in the future will lead to products that can improve all of those three factors, not just the way that you look.
So I won't have to take my daughter's blood. I can one day go to a clinic myself and take advantage of this biohacking.
Yeah, use your own blood.
Yeah, exactly. On the kind of shelves in beauty stores, what sort of new products are we going to be seeing? I know that we're very good at predicting. This year it was like sea moss was going to be a big ingredient, but what sort of things do you think people are going to should start looking out for?
So I think an ingredient that we can look out for in this area is NAD. So this ingredient focuses on giving energy and neurological health. So there's companies that have it infused in drips. So in clinics, in spas, you can have an NAD drip for energy. And I think there's one brand that even promises the CEO experience. So they sell this drip that makes you feel like a CEO. So it's all about boosting your energy. And then there's lots of products that are starting to infuse this within their creams. So I think there's a brand called Intuis that are doing this already. I think we'll start to see that a lot more.
I love that. Just thinking of the way they've branded that. It's like, could you ask for the student experience and be really like chilled out? And could you ask for CEO experience? It's like you start to think about how to brand kind of wellness in a different sort of a way. What other epigenetics, how's that going to filter into beauty a bit more?
So epigenetics, like I said, it's about how behaviors and environment can cause changes to how your cells and genes are expressed and how you age. So Beiersdorf, who are based in Germany, they've invested in a skin age clock system for their R&D. So that helps them develop skin wellness products. So it measures genetic markers of skin aging and then helps them develop new ingredients. There's also a skincare brand that's coming out. It's called Opalor. and they've collaborated with a microbiome company, Sequential, and they've created products that kind of work with the skin's changing microbiome. So they kind of champion the skin as it ages. And it, I think this is a move more towards that kind of resilience claim. So it's working with the skin's microbiome, which changes as it ages, and really just supporting it through that rather than making any huge changes.
And I know on our food and drink platform, there's an awful lot written about kind of actual food and supplements and looking at the microbiome and all of that. So this is obviously like touches so many industries that we cover at WGSN in terms of aging well. I want to go back to societal shifts again, and we have to discuss social media because we've spent, certainly in lockdown, we spent a lot of time looking at ourselves, which if you're my age, which is almost 52, it has its pros and cons. And I know that there's all these beauty filters that are happening where you just don't, you look like almost a perfect avatar. I'd like to just ask you, Cassandra, do you think this has accelerated this movement that everybody just is so much more health aware and they all just want to look younger? I mean, it must have had some influence, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely had quite a negative influence, I think. It's, you look online today, there's just tons of memes about how kids today just look so much more mature or older than when we were online, right? I think it has everything to do with the Instagram effect, this idea of panoptic perfection online, which we've been talking about for ages, literally, which is this idea of sort of comparison culture impacting how we perceive ourselves and how we showcase ourselves to the world. It's this idea that a panopticon is this sort of like structure in a jail where you can see everyone, you know, all the inmates at the same time. And that's really what social media has become, this idea that you can kind of, you have this incredible glance at the world. If you think about the amplification of this in the age of AI, it becomes quite dangerous for the next generation, right? So Gen Z grew up with these tools, these filters. They've become normalized. It created this sort of homogenous beauty standard, right? But actually, Gen Alpha will be the first generation to grow up and enter their teenage years in an already AI-generated world. And in a world where nothing is real and you don't really know what's real and what's not real, those kind of effects in terms of the emotional effects that could have on young people could be really, really, really dire, actually. You know, we already deal with virtual influencers. You know, we've been talking about little Michaela and Shadoo and all these virtual accounts that are perfect, essentially. They have no flaws. They don't age. They are indefinitely 19 years old. What happens when it's more realistic humans that are competing with each other online, right? When we're able to generate human-looking beings, essentially, and they are eternally 19 and they don't age. And, you know, what does that do for the celebrity industry? What does that do for entertainment? There's so much kind of knock-on effects to this that we just do not know at the moment. And it could be really dire for young people.
I think what's really interesting about what's happened with the Pamela Anderson effect, if you want to call it that, or I think she's called Pam Ann, which I love, is that in a way that's that push and pull that you always get with a trend, right? So it's almost like the Gen X, my generation, who didn't grow up as digital natives, are trying to almost reclaim the real and sort of strip that back and as a sort of antidote to this perfect airbrushed avatar look by going free of makeup and just trying to reclaim that. And I think that we're always going to get that push and a pull with something like this. And it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's what we call trend tensions, right? Two things can be trending at the same time. Two things can be real. I think that's exactly right. You know, there's this like hyper, you know, filtered aesthetic that's emerging, but there's also this unfiltered aesthetic emerging, and two can be true at the same time.
I was just going to say it's exactly the same for beauty, and it's so weird to see this hypocrisy almost where you're getting Pamela Anderson completely stripping down on the New York Fashion Week. And then you, on the other side, you have these brands investing huge amounts of money into anti-aging pre-rejuvenation products. And I think there is a demand for both, but it's really treating people as individuals, and there's no one good way to age properly. And maybe that's true feminism. You can choose what's best for you and how you want to do it.
I guess that's why campaigns that Dove do and things like that are always so powerful and really hit a nerve for everyone. They're always so inclusive. I mean, in terms of the shift in consumer relationship to aging more generally, Cassandra, how would you explain this? Because it does feel like a shift.
I think what's really, really interesting, we had just had Trends Days, right? And this was a big conversation during Trends Week, actually. This idea that there is no typical life sort of markers anymore that, you know, you had to hit at a certain age in the past. It was this pressure of, you know, being married by a certain age, having kids at a certain age, you know, having this career at a certain age. But really, that's all kind of out the window now. I think this is accelerated thanks to things like social media, actually. Again, going back to a trend tension, right? Two things can be true at the same time. Social media can be really, really negative and it can fuel things like panoptic perfection, but it also is a window into the world. It allows people to connect with each other and to kind of find common ground and to maybe see an alternative perspective. And so in that regard, we're seeing aging kind of shift. There's this concept that I've been covering a little bit called chrononormativity. And it's this idea that there are just no, you know, there's no normative framework for how we hit life markers. So there's this really famous Friends episode I always use to explain this, where Rachel, the character, Jennifer Aniston's character, says, you know, if she wants to have kids by, you know, a certain age, she has to find her partner by this age. And, you know, she wants to date for this long. And then she has to be married by this age. And it's this extreme pressure. That's not really a thing anymore. I think Gen Z in particular have grown up in a just incredibly uncertain world. And I think they're really solving for uncertainty. They're future-proofing their lives by solving for uncertainty. And what that means is that they're taking to TikTok and they are openly discussing things like freezing their eggs. A lot of them are talking about freezing their eggs at age 25, at their so-called prime, because they know that, hey, you know, we saw that millennials are actually not getting married until much later in life because of things like careers and finances and things like that, knock-on effects from societal markers that define that generation. And I think this idea that Gen Z is so openly discussing this idea that they're freezing their eggs now in such a youth, you know, we've had this conversation before too, like the Botox thing too, like you know, Gen X or millennials might not have gotten Botox at, you know, talked about it in their 20s, but Gen Z is openly discussing that. It's just more of a freedom, I think. And aging is just such top of mind at the moment. There's also this idea of like being late bloomers. So, you know, maybe not getting their house or not being married until a certain age too. And that's being really openly discussed online in a way that's quite vulnerable and raw. And it's allowing people of all ages, 20, 30s or 40s, to really say, you know, hey, maybe, you know, we're not so alone in this struggle that we felt like was a struggle. It's more of a thing that connects us to other humans. And I think TikTok is the catalyst for this. It's really shifting this pressure of aging, if that makes sense.
Brilliant. So just to end, I wondered, Pia, in terms of sort of product development to consider, what should brands do? What's the sort of first thing they should address if they really want to address this aging well shift?
The first thing to address, I don't think, would be product development, actually. I think it would be the marketing. So about aging visibly. So as Cassandra said, it's really important that consumers that are buying these products are seeing themselves in campaigns. And that in itself can be super powerful, kind of creating these online communities where you can speak about the unspeakable, where people can buy into the purpose of the product rather than just an anti-aging cream. That's where the market's going. I think, again, to quote Madonna, who I love, she said the most controversial thing that she's done is to stick around, which I think is incredible. It kind of shows about how much pressure she's just been put under to just disappear into the background. And she's refused. And okay, she hasn't done it in the same way as Pamela Anderson to strip back and go au naturel and grey. She's gone the complete opposite, but she's there. And I think that is the main takeaway for this age agnostics trend.
So to wrap up, last question for you, Cassandra. How do you see this age agnostic concept evolving? Is it going to go beyond beauty?
Yeah, I think it's going to spread and kind of ripple throughout other areas of design from micro to macro. And one example of this is this idea of designing age agnostic cities. So this idea that really city planners have to think quite macro. It's not just, and really consider those on the fringes, actually. It's firstly, it's kids, it's the elderly, it's the disabled. But actually designing cities with this in mind creates better and more resilient cities and cities that work for everyone and those that are inclusive.
Thank you to my guests today, Cassandra and Pia. If you're a WGSN subscriber, forecasts on aging well can be found on Insight and the beauty platforms. And if you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to WGSN.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for our industries And these include food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and consumer tech. You can subscribe to the Create Tomorrow podcast on all major platforms. And if you like what you've heard, why not leave us a rating and review? We'll be back in 2 weeks for our next episode. And in the meantime, why not catch the CEO of WGSN, Carla Bisacci, next week on our other podcast, Lives of Tomorrow.